You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. A very good Thursday morning to you. It pains me to end General Zinni's interview. Absolutely, like I physically have pain doing that. Because, holy smokes, man, it is so good. It is so good. Just instead of me running my yap here for a few minutes, I want you to listen to this. And just, okay, I wish I had a blood pressure cuff on my arm. Anyway, good morning, Thursday, April 6th. Mike McNamara with you on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Today on the program, it's Thursday, so we talk transition. You're going to hear from Angie Morgan, she of Lead Star fame. She joined us a few times, so we'll talk to Angie Morgan this morning. Love having her on, and she's a consultant. You can check her out on the internet, Angie Morgan, Spark, boom, it all comes up. A best-selling writer and former Captain of the United States Marine Corps. So love having Angie on, so she'll join us this morning. And then Pat Murray, he's a retired sergeant, United States Marine Corps, got wounded. I may have medevaced him, as a matter of fact. Actually, he was CASAVAC to Fallujah Surgical. But talking to Pat yesterday, found out he was wounded in Fallujah. And while I was working for the 5th Marine Regiment. And so Pat and I are kind of sort of battle buddies. Anyway, so he'll join us. When he got out, he went to work for Turner Construction. And we have a little bit of a deal going on where Turner's looking for 40 to 50 veterans with combat experience. And they want to hire them. Now, they want your leadership experience. They don't care if you know how to swing a hammer. Got it? Everybody got it? So Pat's going to talk about his experience. He got out of when he got off active duty, he went to work for Turner Construction. He's now a he's going to talk about that experience. He's now a lobbyist on Capitol Hill for veterans of foreign wars. So yeah, Pat Murray. So he lost a leg in Fallujah. So we'll talk to him, and then the gunner's going to join us, and we'll probably talk guns today. So all of that. Now, with all that said, before I play the national anthem and officially start the broadcast, I want you to hear Zinni again. Listen to this. He's talking about the march up and the war plan and all that. Listen to the stuff he says about everything that they knew. And then in the midst of it, then Don Rumsfeld walks in and throws all of it out. And you wonder so if you want to see how the road got paved to where we are today, it's idiots like Rumsfeld, and it's other people in the room that you hear this term, truth to power. Very easy to say. Very easy to say. Not so easy to live up to. So, here you have it.
Don't listen to people who've been in this part of the world for 2-3 decades that tell you it ain't going to be that way. That's exactly what happens. I mean, that's exactly the problem we face. Everybody that comes in's got another damn good idea.
All right, hold on.
You know, sir, let me ask you about that. It's like in these OPTs, I'm not an Ivy League guy, right? I went to community college in California, but I know up is up generally and down is down, and I know bullshit when I hear it. You sit in an OPT to expand the ground war in Afghanistan, and if you read 20 minutes of Afghan history, you'll know that we're trying to create something that's never been created here. Do we understand the timeline for this? If Germany and Japan are 50-year events, this is 150. Do we understand the implications if we're going to go spread this footprint and attempt to do these things? Okay? And again, I'm not an Ivy League guy. You know, I just play one on the radio, but does everybody get this? And you look at the decisions and you hear the, and you think, like, you got to be shitting me.
Well, I will tell you, my approach to, when 9/11 happened, it it's obvious there was one burning objective, get Al-Qaeda.
Roger.
I would have followed the Powell Doctrine, the Weinberger Doctrine, what we did in Desert Storm, overwhelming force into Afghanistan. We would have nailed them at Tora Bora. But we decided to rent an army. It was neat watching SOP guys and agency guys ride around on horses. And what happened when they got to Tora Bora? They bought their way out. They escaped because we didn't put in overwhelming force, which freezes the situation and gets you the chance to really nail the SOBs. We tried to do it on a cheap. What did we do in Iraq? We threw away 10-03-98, which called for 380,000 troops. Why 380,000? Seal the freaking borders. Control the population as you roll back the regime. Do not disband the army. If they don't fight, you know, keep them in garrison, pay them, retrain them, vet their leadership or change it around. These are all part of the plan thrown away. But this big march up to Baghdad, you know, take the statue down, declare victory, you go on a fly onto a carrier, and it's all over. Except it ain't all over. You know, and you could have seen that coming. You could, you know, it wasn't hard to understand that the ingredients for failure are there. And again, I'll go back to tell you, this all sounds good when you're sitting inside the Beltway and somebody comes in and tells you, some neocon tells you that, you know, we're going to put Ahmed Shalabi on the throne. It's all going to be right. The people are going to throw flowers at you when you come in. And you don't listen to people who've been in this part of the world for 2-3 decades that tell you it ain't going to be that way. I mean, that's exactly what happens. I mean, that's exactly the problem we face.
Tony Zinni, I just want to play this little clip of this, and as we get the program going, you know, this is what's happened over there, and what continues to happen is so bullshit.
Everybody that comes in's got another damn good idea. You know, no one. It's lack of study of history. It's lack of study of their profession, of their responsible position. Number one is the need for a strategy, which is too hard, so we fail to do it.
So how the hell can we not have a strategy? Hey, first of all, sir, you got a problem with me? You'll come back on so we can continue this discussion. Yes.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm sitting, if I was sitting there, it's like, because I know Don Rumsfeld's a jackass, right? And I might get fired. And I've got a wife and 4 kids, so I don't want to get fired. So I'm in D.C., I'm in the Beltway. It's like, hey, Mr. Secretary, but I do understand my moral obligation. I completely agree that the march up is going to be great. Fewer troops, General Shinseki doesn't know what he's talking about. This is all going to go swimmingly. We'll get to Baghdad. We'll stay there for a few weeks. So we'll, you know, go back to Kuwait. We'll backload. It'll all be good. Maybe we'll leave a few guys there just so, you know, we can go in and have American food when we get there. However, what happens if it doesn't go that way? What was the answer to that?
Your
name? Get his ass out of here. Is that the way? I mean, because that's what happened ultimately.
Well, I think the first thing you've got to do is make your case. I'll go back to the point is who are the strongest voices wearing uniforms that could make the case? They could walk in and say, Mr. Secretary, all my military experience, all my military education, all my military judgment says this will be a failure. And there were some retired guys saying that. And if you remember, Jim Webb said it was predictable and predicted. And that has to be heard in some way. In the end, I mean, we're going to learn another bitter lesson. I hope the next Secretary of Defense faced with it realizes that you know, going to Baghdad with 130,000 troops and taking down the regime is no big deal. As a matter of fact, every time we did the internal look exercises, the major CENTCOM exercise, the regime was taken down in less than 3 weeks every time. We were looking for something else to do, and that's how we got really invested in understanding what was going to happen with the population, what could come in from outside, you know, what the problems were, which led to a plan that required the number of troops that we had in there. And we tried to force State Department, USAID, and others to get involved in the planning, and they refused. I mean, the game we generated in 1999 up in Washington, Booz Allen Hamilton, was to look at the effect on the ground. With either regime removal by us or regime collapse, it was the same. And it predicted every single thing that happened. It was called Desert Crossing.
Predicted every
thing that happened in Iraq. Can you imagine USAID and the State Department didn't want to play? Incredible.
It now FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, has it out there. You can go online and get it.
All right, we need to change gears. All right, so that guy he's the man. It just makes you sick to your stomach. That the fools, he called for he said 380,000 troops to go there, secure the nation, to keep it secured from things coming in from outside, you know, secure the border, keep the army on the payroll, all the stuff that we didn't do that led to the insurgency. All was predicted, was predictable and predicted. And Don Rumsfeld turned his back on all of that and pulled his own plan out of his ass. And we're still paying for it today. Absolutely unbelievable when you hear that kind of stuff. Hear guys like him talking about it. This is our war plan. This is what it called for. This is why it called for it. Every time we did it, we had the same results. And guess what? Lo and behold, it proves the validity of that whole process. Why you send guys there. Rumsfeld. To say that I hate that guy is not a strong enough word for it. And for those of us that remember, do you remember his snarky ass at press conferences? His snarky, arrogant ass? Yeah, I'm getting fired up. Email says, take it easy, Mac. You just started today. Yeah, but you know, that's, and Zinni's been like this since the first day that I ever heard him talk. He's been this kind of ray of sunshine through this because he's smart. He knows it. He's got great experience. And you know, he'll tell the truth. So, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band rolls it in with us. Now,
so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Check the weather around the Marine Corps. Andrew Morgan is going to join us next. Cloudy, actually it's raining in Quantico, 59 degrees. Camp Lejeune, 67 and cloudy. Granbury, Texas, 52, partly sunny. Up in North Dakota, 37 degrees and sunny. 29 Palms, sunny and 56. Camp Pendleton, 48 and partly cloudy. Camp Smith in Hawaii, 72, dark and cloudy. Okinawa, Japan has warmed up, 71, dark and cloudy. In Fallujah, it's warmed up, 84 and sunny late in the day. Home of All Marine Radio, 58 degrees under cloudy skies. Headed for a high of 73 today in beautiful southern sunny California. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the one and only Battle Mug. Starts as a 10-pound block of aluminum, milled, machined, and anodized. Picatinny rails get slapped on it, and then it's ready for you to make your own. You can start by having the base of it engraved. Name, dates, units, insignia, stuff like that. And then on the rails itself, anything you can put on your weapon, you can put on a rail. Scope, light, what have you. Take it to the field, now it's a tool. You could take it to the office, flags, emblems, insignia, all that stuff you can slap on there. Very, very cool device. You can check out the whole line of products at battlemug.com. You can use the promo code Marine for 15% off. It's a veteran-owned and operated company made entirely in the United States. Check them out. Angie Morgan, next, on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good. The past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Billy Ocean, go figure. Anyway, joining me on a Thursday is Angie Morgan, Why do I hear myself?
I hear you, too. So there's two of us. Hey, good to talk with you.
I know, but I'm hearing myself echoing in my headset. Something's not right here. Okay. All right. Angie and I were chatting the last time she was on her afterward, and we find out that we both have had kind of unique experiences in life. Mine centers around the murder of my two nephews in a domestic violence incident, and then my sister's husband ultimately put a gun in his, he killed himself as well. Angie has had suicide darken your doorstep. So, Angie, tell everybody about, if you would, tell everybody what happened and then how it's affected your life and impacted you.
Yeah, it was just one of those things that, to me, again, came out of nowhere, but had I paid attention to clues, I could have figured it out sooner, but I was living in Jacksonville, North Carolina. My husband, Matt, was deployed to Djibouti, Africa. And it was just one morning. I went up, how do you fill your Saturdays and Sundays when you don't have kids? So you try to be creative. Got up one Saturday, was starting to go, put my shoes on to go for a run. And my parents called. My brother was missing. And so it was one of their shotguns. And this was beyond the realm of possible. How could this be? That's not my brother. He's a fighter. He's a survivor. I didn't even know that anything possibly could have been wrong. And, fortunately, I had some really good friends that drove me to the airport so I could fly back to Michigan to be with my family, with the hope that he was still alive. And so we, canvassed the community. We went on media. We did everything to try to figure out where Dan was and tried to reach out to Dan. It wasn't, he left his cell phone at home in the hopes that we could, make some sort of connection to save him from what he was about to do. We were unsuccessful. 6 days later, the sheriff knocks on my parents' door and confirms the worst, that he had killed himself. I mean, he'd driven a car across state, took a shotgun, pointed it at his heart, and I think he must have laid dead there for a while. And fortunately, my husband could come home to be with me for a week, but then he left, and I was by myself for 6 months. And it was the darkest, saddest, most frustrating time. I mean, this is when you learn about what was going on, and this is when you learn how much your brother was suffering in silence, and this is when you realize, how fucked up his life must have been, and you weren't there to help him, and your parents had no idea, and he was holding on to secrets because he was too ashamed to share some of them. And it was possibly, by hands down, the darkest time in my entire life. And when you shared your story with me, Mac, it broke my heart. I think that not enough people talk about these, what I tend to think are dirty little secrets that people, hold close to them. It's amazing to me how many people, after my brother killed himself, shared their suicide story. It was almost like it was a secret, and it shouldn't have been. I mean, it strangely, oddly comforted me, because when you deal with suicide, and likely you probably feel the same way, when you deal with such tragedy, there's two things you're dealing with. You're dealing with the suicide, like the tragedy of the event, and the loss. And those are really, two separate grief patterns that you have to go through.
For me, one of the great frustrations was that he threatened to do it. And don't tell Michael, because you know how Michael is.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told my father, he said to me, I can't believe he did it. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, he threatened to do this a month ago. And my head almost exploded. It didn't happen, didn't have to happen. The warning could not have been more overt, you know, unless he had bought a billboard. And my frustration is, nobody said anything to me. Well, we knew how you'd react. What, to protect my sister and my nephews? Well, yes. And it kills me.
I can imagine. I mean, just the pain and frustration and even the threats, you know, and I feel the same way. I talk to a lot of my brother's friends, and I don't, in my situation, I don't blame them. They were college kids. They had all had their shit that they were dealing with. I mean, they were, you know, distracted by graduation, distracted by their own lives. They see kids, you know, abuse, you know, alcohol, and I don't know if my brother was doing drugs. I have a strong suspicion that he was. But, you know, you see this type of activity, and you think, gosh, somebody, you could have said something. You could have said something. You know, somebody witnesses somebody else's pain and suffering. And, again, I don't blame anybody, yet I just wish somebody would have reached out to say, you know what? Things are kind of messed up with your brother right now. You need to look at this hard.
You know, one of the things I've learned is that, you know, most people don't do this in silence in some way, shape, or form. They emit something. And, you know, just like you would pick up a set of car keys at a bar if somebody had too much to drink. You know, you have an obligation to intervene, to help, to stick your hand out and say, hey, man, I want to help you. And my conclusion, and I've been involved in domestic violence since 1996 when this happened. I mean, it's not supposed to happen to upper middle class Irish Catholic families, right? But it sure as hell did. And again, of all the things I've ever seen in Iraq and Afghanistan, the single worst thing that I've ever seen in my life happened to my older sister in the United States, and I don't know how, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know how my dad lives with that. You were warned and you didn't do anything about it. You didn't protect them. You didn't take care of them, you know, and I didn't talk about it for a long time. And one day I asked my sister, you know, it really bothers me that you didn't tell me. She said, Michael, it bothers me that I didn't. She said, because you know, it's interesting when you talk about this kind of stuff. Some days I say it depends where I am in my menstrual cycle, how much it bothers me. Obviously today my menstrual cycle isn't where it should be. But she said, Michael, there was no doubt in my mind what you would do. And I said, she said, my sons would be alive if I'd have just told you. She said, but, you know, we all know how you are. And for whatever reason, I didn't take him seriously. And she said, I regret it too. And so she was trying to call me that night. I was on the phone doing hockey stuff for my two sons. And I hate call waiting. And so I didn't answer it. And so the next day, when I ultimately had a chance to talk to her, she was talking about killing herself. When I finally got a hold of her. Because her husband beat her. And then he, you know, the reality was he chased the two boys, 4 and 6 years old, around the house and shot them both in the head. And then he killed himself. And so, I mean, of all the bad things that we've seen in combat, none of us have seen our family like that, you know? And so she lives with that. And so, you know, when is suicide a rational act? When it makes the pain go away, when the pain is too much. And so that's what it was for my sister. And, You know, and so when I spoke to her, you know, I told her, I said, hey, you can't kill yourself. If you kill yourself, Peggy, you know, he wins, because that's what he wanted. He wanted to destroy you. And so for the lives of Tori and Tyler to make something, your life has to be something. And I know it's not, you're not, God has not invented the time to heal this wound ever, you know, but, you know, hopefully, you know, with a lot of hard work, you know, you'll learn to live with it. And I was saying that, and then at the same time, I'm thinking, how do you learn to live with that kind of pain? And so, Angie, I'm curious, what is your message to people who worry about people that struggle in suicide based on your experience? What is your message to them?
So I think there's a few different ways to look at it. You know, I think, like, for me personally, how do I live with tragedy? And I'm sure your response to is probably quite similar. You know, first and foremost, I mean, I think most veterans who listen to this program, you probably know somebody who's killed to kill themselves. I mean, the statistics are high enough that we are all, or have had a friend killed in combat, or we've experienced loss. So the first thing that I think really helped me was talking about it. You know, you think about weakness, you know, going to talk to somebody about your problems. That was probably the best thing I did, was talk with somebody. And it was odd to me going to talk to a counselor and just realize, like, how much shit, you know, you're dealing with. We could laugh about it. It was funny. I'm like, no. The problem is with my brother. And it was, no, like, the problem is with you, man. And you got to figure this out, how you're processing this pain. And that was, I think, a really important step. Another piece is to not isolate yourself, because it is so easy to be so pissed off at the world. I was talking to somebody recently who was experiencing pain. They had lost their spouse, and it was pretty tragic, too, how their spouse died. It was very sudden. And, you know, you want to walk around with a scowl and say, don't you people realize? How can you be so happy? I am miserable. And so it's important to talk to people and build your friendship network, even as hard as that can be. So that was, for me, really something important. And also, too, I think me as a human, I'm really in tune to people around me now. You know, there were plenty of warning signs with my brother. I'm convinced of it. And there are plenty of warning signs around the people of me that, you know what, maybe they are depressed. Maybe things aren't going their way. You know, I think about people in my brother's circle. What if they had spoken up to him and said, dude, you're suffering, man. You've got to go see somebody. Somebody could have reached him. It wasn't going to be me. It wasn't going to be my parents. It wasn't going to be my sister. Somebody could have reached him, or at least reached out to him and offered a hand. So I think that, you know, our responsibility as human beings is to really just pay attention to the people around us. You know, really ask the tougher questions. How are you really doing? Don't give me everything's okay. Tell me what's going on. And be forceful with that.
Hold on. I want to play something for you.
Mm-hmm.
This is classic veteran cover-up. Not that wasn't, but this is.
I'm good. But I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the servicemen...
Right? That's classic. I'm good, but I can't sleep at night. I'm good, but I sleep, but I wake up five times a night.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Yeah. You're not good.
No, it's not. I mean, that's not good. It's bad, and you can't, you know, again, it takes a lot to admit that things aren't right. There's a vulnerability that goes on with it, but you can't get help until you acknowledge what's going on. And then I think if anybody's listening, you know, thinking about suicide because whatever you're experiencing is too tough, let me tell you, from somebody who loves somebody who killed themselves, it is not, I mean, don't think about yourself right now and how you're feeling. Think about the people around you and the devastation and impact that they're going to experience with your loss. Don't discount that. And I'm not saying that your pain isn't real, but I'm just saying, think about the people who love you and who care about you. Your loss will be significant to them, and it will change them. I'd like to say, and, you know, I don't know how it's going to change them. It could drive them into a miserable downward spiral, Or, you know, they can be somebody like me. Like, I've used this experience to be of better service to other people around me. But it's going to change them, and it's going to leave just an empty place in their heart.
All right. Do you talk about it when you go speak?
You know, I don't, because it's like, I mean, not enough, I should say. I'll talk about my brother dying, but I can't talk. I don't know how I'm going to respond. I mean, this is like more than 10 years ago.
Right.
I don't know how I'm going to respond, like if I tear up, and I don't like to show my emotions to people, especially when I'm there to motivate and inspire them, you know, with leadership development.
Quit being a pussy. Come on, man. What's wrong with you? No, let me tell you, take it from me, like, all right, so you go someplace to talk and this comes up, and I've learned, though, kind of how to navigate it, which is just, I just stop. And so I'm speaking to a few hundred people, right? And I did it at this thing a year ago at USC. So I'm downtown Los Angeles, there's all these people there, the mayor of Los Angeles kicks it off, and we're talking, telling stories about domestic violence. And what I've learned, what I swore at their funeral, you know, those two small white caskets. And I swore that until the day I die, I would tell their story so that their lives would not have been lost in vain. And at some point, I would get a letter saying that, you know, I think hearing your story saved me and saved my kids. And so I go speak whenever I can. Whenever somebody asks me, I go tell that story. And again, so some days my menstrual cycle cooperates, some days it doesn't. And I just shut up. I just stand there. And everybody's looking at me. And I put like one finger up in the air, like, hold on. And then it passes, and then I continue telling the story. So quit being a wuss, man. Suck it up.
And I should like add, I mean, most of my work is doing corporate training and development and, you know, on the subject of leadership. I've
okay.
never really been straight out asked to talk about suicide and the effects it has. And I would. And I don't think, I mean, I've written about it in my first book. I've written about my brother's death. I mean, I will talk, obviously. I mean, I'm sharing this story with you. In fact, I'm writing another book right now. And I'm going to talk. I mean, it's a book about people and the importance of people, especially during low times, but how you can use, you know, networks and groups of people to do amazing things together. So that's kind of an overview of the next book that I'm writing. And I'm going to talk a little bit more boldly about the impact of my brother's suicide. So I'm not chicken per se. It's just that, you know, I'm in a corporate training environment. I mean, people are there to learn leadership. It's a heavy subject, suicide. You don't know how, you know, I don't know how I'm always going to respond, and I definitely don't know how other people are going to respond. But in the right format, yeah, I'm not chicken.
Okay. You sound like me when I say I'm not chicken.
I'm talking about it today. It was funny to hear, you know, right before we get on the phone call today, I thought we were going to talk about women and leadership. And
we are.
Some of the exciting stuff that's coming out of the Marine Corps. And then you're like, hey, you okay to talk about suicide today? I'm like, shit, yeah. Okay, let's do it.
All right. Let me take a quick break.
Okay.
And we'll come back. We have about 50 minutes left, and we'll talk about I want to get your thoughts on the whole Marines United thing. Because I just trust me, because you were an officer, you were not exempted from sexual harassment in the Marine Corps by anybody. So, and the anonymous nature of the internet facilitated all that. So, curious to get your thoughts on that. Angie Morgan, the Spark Lady, joins me on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. We're talking transitions. This morning we're talking suicide, domestic violence. We'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website. Look at what events they have lined up. Attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good. But the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue, and one of our management consultants, former Marine Captain Angie Morgan, joins us. Angie, tell everybody how they find you on the internet.
Yeah, if they go to leadstar.us, I am there. I'm also on LinkedIn. Reach out.
All right, so reach out on LinkedIn, and you can find her. Your thoughts, the whole Marines United thing, and the Marine Corps response.
Oh, okay. So, I've got a lot of thoughts on this.
All right.
I was surprised. No. I was disappointed by how not surprised I was about this news. I mean, it was disgusting. It was perverted. It was derogatory. I could use a lot of different, like, reactions that I had.
Right.
But I was not at all surprised. And there's two reasons. And I think that this is really important for the culture to understand. There's two reasons why I'm not surprised. Let's just be honest. There hasn't been a lot of progress made around the treatment of women in the Marine Corps since I left active duty, or even when I started active duty. In the past, you know, 20 years, not a lot of progress has been made about the attitudes towards women. And the second piece, and I think this is interesting because I don't think it is just a woman thing. I think it's a culture thing. I think that the Marine Corps has a culture where we shame people who don't conform. I remember when I was a young second lieutenant, around, you know, and again, I I'm so embarrassed to say this, but we didn't have Facebook. We didn't have iPhones when I was in the Marine Corps. I'm old. But there was a picture that was circulating around the Internet among friends of mine, and it was a Marine who was overweight. And the comments that were, you know, following that image were pretty, pretty brutal. We are tough on people who we feel don't fit in, whether it's gender, whether it's physical fitness, whether it is height and weight standards, whatever. We are just brutal. So I think that the shame piece is really important to understand for the culture because it's anti-values of the Marine Corps. And then the gender piece needs to be addressed. That's my reaction.
I think that there is hasn't been one woman that I've spoken to that their reaction more is, I'm shocked that people are shocked.
Yeah. I am too. I mean, yeah, I get it that this is a gross, disgusting, I don't know, act. But, I mean, the technology just makes things that have been going on in the barracks, you know, it just heightens it and spreads it a lot faster.
Now, you left the active duty in 1999, 2000?
2001.
Okay. I guess the question is, what does the Marine Corps do about it?
So I think that there's a few things that the Marine Corps has to do about it, and it's not an easy fix. I mean, it's a cultural journey the organization has to take. We need, and I say we, because I feel like, I mean, I still feel part of the Marine Corps, and I feel very responsible.
You can say we, it's all right.
And I talk to Marine Corps leaders all the time about this issue. And I think first and foremost that we need to understand the value women play in the force. That it's not just a numbers game. That women actually have value. Like we need to convince multiple layers of the organization that women, having women in the Marine Corps makes it a better organization. And I don't think a lot of people believe that. I think that we're still selling. I think that there's a lot of selling that needs to go on. So I think that that's the first start. Like, we have to convince the organization that diversity is good. And then we, and you know, it's funny. Like, kids grow up, like, in this day and age, men and women grow up competing against each other. I've got a sixth grader who got his ass kicked yesterday in a run by a girl, and he was so cool with that. Like, he was just like, oh my gosh, Sophia beat me, ha ha ha, and he was awesome about it. And I just wanted to say in the back of my mind, join the Marine Corps because your attitude will change. Pretty soon you're going to not like that at all. But something happens. You know, something happens within the culture. And women, you know, suddenly are this weaker force. And I've got some ideas of what exactly happens. But I don't think until we address the value that women get in the Marine Corps, we're going to make headway. And I also think that we need to really seriously think about recruiting women and actually putting a strategy together to recruit women who can meet the physical fitness standards. I mean, I watch Ninja Warrior. I watch all these other shows that show talented, physical, athletic women who can kick the crap out of most men. They're not flocking to the Marine Corps. You know, I think the Marine Corps will take, you know, we're really, really selective on the type of men that we'll take to join the force. But we don't care. We just want women. And then when they come in the organization and they have a significant attrition rate, we're cool with that. If this was a business and your women were not succeeding at your entry level and so many just couldn't pass the initial test, we would look at recruiting and see what we're doing wrong. So my long stance has been the Marine Corps accepts women. We don't recruit women. And there's a big difference. And this isn't to slight any sister in the Marine Corps. I love you. I respect you. Congratulations. You made it. You passed the trials. But I think that if we did two things, had the organization really start to understand the tangible benefit bring to the organization, women bring to the organization, and we aggressively recruit women who can meet the intense physical fitness standards of the Marine Corps, I think the organization will change.
I had General, do you know Paul Kennedy, General Type?
I only communicated via email. I don't know him.
He's the head of Marine Corps Recruiting Command.
Oh, good. He's got a big job ahead of him.
He's a good friend of mine. He was on the program a week ago Wednesday. and we were discussing Kate Germano's criticism,
mm-hmm.
which yours are, you echo her criticism. And he said, Matt, when Kate wrote that, she was right. She was a recruiter. He said, for every one woman that you'll ship 99 men, 95 men. So you recruit the men, and the women fall into your lap. That's how we used to recruit women. He said, we don't do that anymore. We are now a sponsor of USA Wrestling. We are a sponsor of, I want to say, some mixed martial arts. He said, and we are out there selling, profiling, and recruiting women that can meet the physical standards that we need them to. So your criticisms, they're trying to answer them.
No, I believe that. And I've had ongoing conversations with General Dunford about this, too. I mean, I had the brilliant idea because of, you know, foxhole politics. I'm like, why don't we just recruit lesbian athletes? Can't we just do that?
Whoa.
He thought that was a little bold.
That is a little bold.
But I was just like, well, let's talk about these barriers that women have. Let's be creative on going around that. And, yeah, I think that Kate Germano was absolutely spot on. And I know that there's a lot of calls, too, to talk about integration and boot camp. I'm not a fan of that. I mean, other services have similar challenges with gender in their ranks, and they have integrated, you know, entry-level indoctrination programs. So I don't think that's it. But I do think that there's something to, you know, the type of people that we're recruiting. And
it's interesting, you know, Angie, that you, and I know you have to go here, but not one woman that I've interviewed about this believes that first phase integration is a good thing. That they say, look, integrate as much as possible, but there is a good reason to be separate and to learn and to be around female leaders. And so I think that's interesting. But Paul Kennedy was very upbeat about the attrition rates and the improvement of numbers on initial physical fitness tests, the way poolies are treated now, female type. And he said, we're headed in the right direction. He said that criticism was valid 2 years ago. It's not valid today. We're beyond that. And so interesting stuff.
I would say that they can be more aggressive with that, though. And I agree that they're making changes. So there's two things. I think the challenge with I wanted to talk about. I think the challenge right now, though, with attracting those women, again, athletes, a lot of different options and opportunities. The value proposition of the Marine Corps needs to improve. Join our force, ladies. You will get sexually harassed. There's a chance you'll be hunted down, and somebody will take a nude photo of you and share it with you. When you get out, your opportunity for jobs are limited because veterans have a higher unemployment rate. And you're going to be more at risk for suicide. Like, I really think that we need to work on the value proposition for women to join the force. And I think that starts looking internally. So it's great that we're bringing, you know, that we're perhaps upping the game. But until we change culture, nothing, it's not going to matter. And then there's another thing. I did an NPR interview on the subject. And I can stay for as long as you want, Mike.
Okay.
Shuffled. Uh-huh. I did an NPR piece on Marines United, and I was talking about the culture. And I was saying, like, the culture has a solid framework, honor, courage, commitment. Like, it should not tolerate this type of behavior. And after that NPR piece, I had so many emails and comments from men coming in who were Marines. And I'm like, and they were so supportive. And I knew some of these people, and I'm like, well, I didn't know this is how you felt. But I also didn't realize that you felt this and, you know, you're finally sharing this. It's like, men, diversity is not a woman's issue. We can't take this fight on by ourselves. Please, like, if I have to write you a freaking handwritten invitation, join the party. Like, we need strong male leaders up there saying women aren't just good for our force. They drive performance for our organization. We need more women. Help us. So I'd like to see that.
You know, it's crazy because we had, God, I wish I could remember who was on. It was in the last month. Came on and said, hey, we desperately need your help. We get it that on the Marines United site, only maybe 500 people access that hard drive. But what about the other 29,500 that saw the comments, saw some of the pictures posted on the main page, and didn't say anything, and didn't put an end to it? That's the bigger problem. The fact that there's idiots, we got it. Right? They're out there. But what we need, and I'll never forget what she said, we desperately need, it was an email, you to help us. We can't do this alone. And which echoes exactly what you said.
You know what's funny, too? And going back to our culture, you know what? You wear, this is back in the day for me, like you wear your camis off base, somebody's going to call you out on that.
Right.
You know, hey, uniform violation. Or you don't tuck your shirt in or your uniform doesn't look, something is off. Somebody's going to call you out on that. Yet, standerbys would see their female colleagues, their family. I mean, this is supposed to be family. They would let people talk about their family this way. And that's a problem. So I'm with you. And I think that we just need not just more vigilance, but more voice and action. So I'm asking the men, too, please, like, be a diversity champion. Let me an email. I'll share with you how.
Yeah.
I've got ideas.
Let me read you an email. Hey, Mac, I'm a grunt by trade. And probably like a lot of guys, I never serve very much with women. I find it crazy that this stuff is allowed to go on. My sense, though, is that in mixed gender units, they get used to it, and there's this tolerance for it. I don't know, because of the nature of our work in combat arms units, that we tolerate that kind of nonsense. Now, maybe we'll find out that we do. I just can't imagine leaders in the units that I was in allowing this to go on, let alone prey on young Marines in the workplace. I find it crazy. It's not a world I lived in, probably something I don't understand well, and I scratch my head when I hear it. But to think that a female Marine of junior rank would come to work and have to put up with this stuff every day, just as a matter of being in the Marine Corps, to me, pisses me off.
I'm so glad to hear that thing, and I like the thing, like maybe I don't understand it. Because I was a public affairs officer, and I can't tell you the amount of time I got hit on directly by colonels, majors, you know, even my peers, right? I mean, just having to deal with this shit every single day, maybe every other day, but frequently enough. But it's like, you know, gosh, I just want to do my job. I don't have to deal with this shit. And it is, I think, like, talk to your female colleagues. Ask them what happened to them. I mean, it could have been very subtle, or it could have been pretty extreme. I never, you know, I would say, like, was I sexually harassed? Oh, yeah. But I probably didn't realize it until 20 years later, and like, oh, yeah, that was wrong. But talk to your female colleagues. They have stories. I would be hard-pressed to find somebody who didn't have a story.
Much discussion about what the Marine Corps should do, and is it time for people to be held accountable? And we don't need another class. We've had a ton of classes about this kind of stuff. I'm curious about your thoughts about that.
So yeah, I don't think that works. I think that it starts with understanding. I think that what we need to do is have, you know, I think look at key points in somebody. So there's a couple things I think that need to happen. And I think that these are related. I think it's all under the umbrella of leadership. I think that it starts with, you know, entry-level experiences and helping people understand inclusive and exclusive language. I think language is key at boot camp as well as OCS and follow-on schools. I think that we really need to educate and help, you know, those frontline leaders when they're indoctrinating people into the culture, really think about what keeps people in and what keeps people out and how do we talk about women. I think that's key. And I think the second thing is that our values exist for a reason. We've got some of the best leadership principles, you know, ever drafted. They work. And they need to be reinforced at every single possible point in professional development of every Marine's experience. Because what I've observed is that, you know, we teach them, but then we don't always reinforce them at key schools. And we don't talk about the importance of keeping those and how do you keep those within a culture at those key schools. I mean, even officers. Think about an officer who's like major and above. They go off to different schools where they don't get that values reinforcement. And think about their career trajectory, too. And I think some of the, you know, the higher profile unethical behavior of senior officers, you see how people, again, values and ethics, those are perishable skills unless they're reinforced. And the temptations as you grow up the rank are even higher to be unethical or to get passes at less than best behavior. So I think that we just really need to think about cultural reinforcement at key stages.
I think that people need to have the wood laid to them. I think time for classes is over. I think that, you know, and I believe the same thing at Paris Island. That you'll get somebody's attention when it isn't a staff sergeant or a sergeant getting court-martialed, but it's a colonel.
Mm-hmm.
That whole everything your unit does or fails to do, you own that. And you're being charged with dereliction of duty based on what they did. You want to send a message to leaders across the Marine Corps, and then the sergeant major, his court-martial's next. And he's going to be charged with the same thing. That was your business, boys. You failed. And you're going to be held accountable. Until we do that, when we just punish junior people, you know, we're missing the mark.
Yeah, I definitely think it starts at the top. And I've been really pleased by General Neller's response. I mean, I can tell he cares. I feel that he very deeply cares about the issue and is very committed to addressing it in a way that actually moves the needle on this issue.
Well, you know what? I agree with you, and I know him. But the bottom line is the bottom line, and he has to move the needle because, the rhetoric stuff is stupid. And, again, this is a problem in every grammar school, middle school, high school, and college across the university. In fact, General Kennedy said he was at an event, and he was talking to, and it was some kind of college event, and so he was there, and it was presidents of universities and things like that, and he said one approached him and says, "You guys don't know how lucky you are. We deal with the same issues and have virtually no power over these students. You guys at least have your own justice system that you can deal with it. We're essentially helpless." As they assert their First Amendment rights and blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, it's the individual female that has to take a male to court, you know, and go through that. You at least have much stronger tools to deal with it. And, but it's not a local phenomenon by any stretch. And, do you think one of the interesting things, that came out of the commandant's testifying in front of the Senate Armed Service Committee that day, where he got wirebrushed pretty good, was his admission: "Hey, I don't do social media. I don't have a Facebook account." Do you think that general officers ought to have those accounts so at least you can be somewhat familiar with the social battlefield that your Marines are constantly on? I know you're older and you don't do it, but you know what? You need to. Do you think that ought to be mandatory?
Yeah, I hate to say that anything ought to be mandatory, but here's what I do believe. I think that the barracks has moved online. Like the chatter and conversation of the barracks has moved online. And as an officer, I had duty. I went to the barracks. I plugged my head in. I mean, I wanted to see what people were talking about. And so I think it's part of a vigilant responsibility. And so, yeah, I know that a lot of senior leaders, people of a certain age, they aren't socially engaged. But I think it's critical. I think it's critical to at least have awareness. You know, you may not update your status. You may not tweet. You may not do those things. You may have somebody do it for you. But I think awareness is key. And you could have, like, your staff members, too, you know, tweet and communicate before. I think, public affairs. We used to run the base paper, the Hawaii Marine. I was the editor. It was a great time in my life. people don't read the paper. You know, it's like, again, where do people communicate? They communicate online. Nobody reads the freaking space paper. You know, they all read online, you know, Marine Times. They'll listen to podcasts. It's just where people are chattering. So I think the leadership responsibility is to go where the conversations are. Like, you have to have vigilance around that. And if you want to communicate and you think you're going to do it through a space paper or whatever exists nowadays, it just doesn't work that way.
Right.
You know, you have to be a part of the conversation. It's not a pass. I just am thinking about, you know, approaches to communication. You can't have a passive approach to communication when you're responsible for a force at large.
All right. First of all, at some point we're going to get to the subject we were supposed to talk about. So.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I think this wasn't a depressing call today.
No, you know what? hold on. I'll read you one more email. Hey, Mac.
Yeah.
Pretty blown away by the conversation today. You know, I've heard Angie before, and I listen to you on a pretty regular basis. You have no idea what people have in their past. I have a member of my family that was killed in a domestic violence incident. It has scarred me for life. I never knew anything about it. And to think that she was going through that and didn't share it with us makes me sad to this day. I think that you're sharing with the rest of us, and Angie's sharing with the rest of us, is just a reminder that we need as people to stay involved with people's lives, to let people know that we care about, that we're their friends no matter what. And I think that's as good as you can do. You leave the door open like that, and then hopefully they'll choose to open it. It's not only on you. There's a piece of it on them, and we have to understand as well. And holding them a little bit responsible, I know it sometimes sounds a little bit hard, but that's the truth. The only thing you can do is keep the door open and communicate, and hopefully they will use it, because they have a vote in this too. Thank you both for sharing your stories with us this morning. Certainly moving stuff and not easy stuff. God bless the both of you. Hang in there. Life certainly does get better. Anything you do to cope there, Angie? When, because this, again, there's no amount of time that's been created that heals these kind of wounds. How have you coped all these years?
Well, I just want to say thank you for that.
Yeah,
and
cool.
I'm glad that my story has, and your story, Mac, too, when you told me that, I felt like our relationship certainly developed quite quickly through that exchange, and I appreciate that email. You know, coping, I think it's a little bit different for everyone. For me, it was, I'm a runner. I think that, to me, that's my meditation, and that's been really, really helpful. And Tucker, I mean, I think that I've been really fortunate after that experience. I had a really great group of women, fellow, you know, Marine wives, who were just there for me. And as hard as it was to lean on them, they were there, and they didn't let me feel embarrassed or like I was abusing their friendship. They were just awesome. And so I think, you know, in times when we feel like we want to crawl in a hole, it's actually people. It's people. It's relationships. I think those are the things that sustain us. There's a lot of research out there, too, that people who have relationships live longer and have better, you know, life outcomes and life satisfaction. And so it's hard to admit. You know, you to be open about what you're experiencing, but gosh, feels good. You know, my husband, he had a conversation with our pastor, and I thought this was a really just brilliant, you know, thought about pain. You know, our instincts are to run away from that, you know, scary door that's inside of our mind. But what if you ran towards it? What if you just ran towards it and opened it up a little bit? And that's really where the healing begins.
Angie Morgan, lead star. You can find her on LinkedIn. You can just Google her. She's a best-selling author. She's a consultant on management and leadership. Angie, it's awesome to have you on, and always a pleasure. Thanks for doing this morning.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity, Mac, and thanks for everybody for listening. I think this is a great program.
Awesome.
And I'm honored to be a part of it, and
wow.
I hope that your success continues.
All right. Thank you. That is Angie Morgan here on a Thursday. Yeah, she and I were talking, and just not out of the blue. I know what it was. Matt was listening, and I relayed the story about my sister, and Matt. And then Matt and I were talking about Crossroads, and he mentioned, he said, you know, Angie has, you know, a similar episode, and she's not opposed to talking to it. So then Angie and I had a conversation, which was the genesis of this conversation today. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about Turner Construction. Yeah, joining us is a medically retired Marine, Pat Murray. He works for the VFW on Capitol Hill now. And went to work for Turner Construction when he left Walter Reed Bethesda, and had a great experience there. So we're going to talk to Pat, more of All Marine Radio, on a Thursday, coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.